Larry, do you recall your first job with Kanoi?
I do. I remember going to the first rehearsal and just being blown away by the singing, and I thought this will be a lot of fun. So, yeah. So I joined up, and the first gig I played was Kimball.
Yeah.
Playland Ballroom. And I offered to help drive, to be helpful, and unfortunately my drive shaft broke on the way up there, and I think it was Grant and I out on the highway hitchhiking with a guitar and amplifier, and we got there late, but it was good music when we got there.
So you joined the band in what time period, Larry?
That was January 67.
Okay. So now, and so Doug switches to bass guitar.
That's right.
At this point.
I didn't think he had any trouble doing it either, if I remember correctly. He just was a real natural. He just switched right over and sounded great. He was real solid. We had between Larry, Grant, myself, and Bob and Doug, we had amazing vocals and very nice music. It was all guitars at the time.
We had some impressive gigs those first few months that I joined. One was up in Fargo with Paul Revere and the Raiders.
You opened up for Paul Revere and the Raiders?
Right. We opened up for Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Do you remember what month that was?
I have it written down in my book.
It was that year. It was in the first 6 months after I joined the group. So.
No, these were gigs that we got through Ron Yentz, again, in that radio station in Fargo. Mm-hmm. And that's how we were able to do that.
Well, Paul Revere and the Raiders were a huge band.
Lots of hits.
What was? Mm-hmm. Did you guys hang out with them and talk to them?
Actually, we did get to party, sort of, with them at the hotel afterwards. And they were nice guys. I remember Drake Levin being a really nice guy. In fact, wasn't that the gig?
Tell him the shock.
Yeah. Oh. Somebody loaned him a guitar, and he touched his guitar and the microphone stand and got shocked and thrown right on his back. And I remember Paul and Mark Lindsay just kind of, oh, well, you know, Drake likes to fall down a lot. And he looked dazed. He really looked dazed. And interestingly enough, if I can jump ahead and tell this story, in 1970, Drake was in Hawaii with another band, and he and I were actually sitting around one night, and I told him, Drake, I remember the first time we saw you guys, you were on stage, and boy, do you remember that night? You had a nasty shock on stage, and his eyes kind of glassed over. And I asked him, are you okay? And he went, yeah, for a second there, I was flat on my back on that stage in the Fargo Civic Center. And it's, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that to you. No, it was kind of a rush. It was neat. But, yeah, those were fun gigs. They were great crowds. We got to do like a half hour, 45 minutes before the main act, and we were stars. It was fun.
Who else was in the band? You had Paul Revere, you had Mark Lindsay and Drake, and who else?
Fang was the bass player, and Smitty was the drummer. And that was a terrific group.
Fang, I assume, was a nickname.
Yeah, that's what they went by, and Fang, Smitty, and Drake.
And did they have their...
They had their...
Regalia on?
Yes, their Revolutionary War costumes. Yeah.
And the British flag behind them.
That would have been Dave Clark.
Oh, yeah. There we go. I got this British thing.
I'll never forget this date. It was June 19th, 1967. It was my sister Nancy's 18th birthday. My father drove me to Foley, Minnesota to pick up a brand new 1967 Mustang Fastback, powder blue. My dad was a state trooper. It was a six-cylinder. He was so proud of me. I drove the Mustang to St. Cloud, picked up my sister Nancy and a friend of hers, and we drove to Fargo, North Dakota, and that was the night we opened for the Dave Clark Five. I'll never forget it. It was just a great day. I was a big hero for my sister.
Wow. At some point here, you guys go back to Milford, Iowa, to IGL.
Yes.
How did that come about?
That's a good question. Was that based on one of the Battle of the Bands won?
I believe that was from the April Battle of the Bands where we won first place. They had about 13 bands all around the edge of the roof gardens. Everybody kind of set up at once.
That's right.
And then we played, and we won a recording contract from that.
Well, there's a little history before that. In March of 67, we went down with the five-piece group. That would have been shortly after Larry joined. And it was Pat, Grant, Doug, I, and Larry. And we recorded, which went on to be our biggest single. it was a hit in Fargo. It made the top 10 in Fargo and Grand Forks, and that's Oh No, Not My Baby.
And who had done that originally?
It's recorded by a lot of people. Maxine Brown had the original, and Manfred Mann had a version of it. Mm-hmm. And the flip side was a Four Tops song, There's Something About You. So that was our second session at IGL. These were all lined up by Ron Yentz from the radio station KQWB in Fargo. I should add, we had no contracts of any type with the studio or with the radio station. Everything was just done by a kind of handshake and agreement and just telling us where to go. We never paid a penny for the recording sessions, and we were never paid anything for the recording sessions.
Do you have any idea how many copies they pressed up on these 45s?
I don't. Cliff Plagman, the original engineer, sadly passed away in the past couple of years. John Senn still has the studio, and he's actually the one who runs the Iowa Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he may know. That would be an interesting question. Mm-hmm. We did have some personnel changes at that time. Pat was a student at St. Cloud State, had a reputation for being quite a good actor. Did that in high school at a cathedral, being in the Music Man, and he also did that at St. Cloud State. After we did those recording sessions in March, he told us that he had, I think he had the lead or a very important part in one of the plays at St. Cloud State, so we were going to have to get a drummer to fill in. And so that led to a period where we had several different drummers and personnel changes. And I'll let Pat tell a bit of his story.
Just for the record, who's doing the vocals now on Oh No, Not My Baby?
Those would have been Grant's lead vocals.
Okay. Yep. And the flip side, There's Something About You, Baby?
Also Grant.
Okay. All right. So we'll go through a number of sort of fill-in drummers then after Pat leaves for school?
Yeah, I did a bunch of musicals at St. Cloud State, and the band would basically find a drummer to replace me for the run of the show and the rehearsals, which would be about a 3-4 week period, which when the band was working as much as it was kind of a tough deal. And finally, in the spring quarter, I did another major musical, and the band just thought that it would be easier to just replace me, and I agreed with them. I thought, I don't want to, have the band suffer because I'm gone all the time. So I moved on with my acting career, and the band moved on with the music and did quite well.
And who did you guys use for drummers?
Well, we got a drummer from Fargo on the recommendation of Grant. We never heard him play. None of us knew him. His name was Mark Rowe, W-R-O-E. His brother, Steve Rowe, had a group called the Furies that had quite a good reputation from Fargo. And actually, as a high school teenager, Mark had played with Buddy Knox and even did a summer stint with the Dick Clark Cavalcade of Stars. And his first gig, we just met him at the ballroom, and he showed up and set up his drums and played with us without having ever hearing us, and we'd never heard him. He was quite a talented drummer.
Okay, so let's back up to that Battle of the Bands in April 67. At the Roof Garden in Arnold's Park, Iowa, and you tie for first place, correct?
Yes, and I was trying to remember the name of the group we tied with, and I think it was a group that John Senn was had something to do with. And out of not wanting to make it look like a set-up deal, we were actually given the first place award, even though the judges had a tie. And the group at that time would have been Grant on lead vocals and Larry on lead vocals and guitar. Doug was on bass, I was on guitar, and then the drummer would have been Mark Rowe.
And what was the prize for winning?
The prize was an appearance on the Paul Revere and the Raiders TV show Where the Action Is. And they were going to have a national battle of the bands, and so we would represent kind of the upper Midwest area.
So that was kind of a big deal.
It was a real big deal and exciting. that led to another recording session, because to be on the show, we had to have a 90-second song rather than a full tour, 2.5-minute song.
And what song did you record?
We did a 90-second version of You've Got Your Troubles, a song that the Fortunes had had a big hit with.
And it had to be 90 seconds for...
90 seconds, yes.
It had to be 90 seconds for a reason?
I think just for time limits of the TV show, for the number of contestants they were going to have.
At some point, you meet up with Dale Menton and wind up in Dove Recording Studio in Bloomington. How did you run into Dale Menton?
Well, let's see. I would say... most of the bands knew each other back at that time, at least casually. Dale Menton was quite a good guitar player and had a group called The Gestures from Mankato. Another good guitar player, Gus Dewey. And he was he got into the recording business and was noted for his writing and his producing and singing, playing. And I can't remember if again, this may have been our manager, Jay, that talked to him and set up a session at Dove Studios with Dale in the, that would have been the summer of 67, June.
What songs did you record at Dove?
Larry, take that one.
Oh, okay, well, three songs we did. Without the One You Love, a Four Tops song, Stevie Wonder was a co-writer. Sea of Heartbreak, a Don Gibson song, and a song I wrote called Baby My Life's Worth Living Now, and Dale added lots of vocal ideas to it, so it ended up having lots of layers on it, which was kind of interesting.
Did Dove have more sophisticated recording equipment compared to IGL?
They must have.
Oh, yeah.
Pull that off.
More than three whole tracks, actually. because there were a lot of layers coming on the singing, and I don't know how many tracks there were back then. Do you know, Bob? Maybe at least four, but probably eight?
Yeah, I don't remember.
And again, for the record, who's doing the lead vocals on these tunes, these three?
Grant sang the first two.
Which two are those?
Without the One You Love and Sea of Heartbreak. Grant sang lead on those, and I sang lead on the original song, Baby, My Life is Worth Living Now.
Were any of those songs released on a 45?
No, they weren't released. If I recall correctly, the band at that time, Larry and I played guitars, Doug played bass, and I believe the drummer was John Cummings.
Right.
And I think Pat actually came down and sang in the background vocals.
Was I in the band at the time? And then John was doing one of my hiatus things when I was doing a play, and then I was singing. I can't remember, but I know John Cummings was playing drums, and I was singing, so I had to have still been in the band in some fashion if I was there singing. I would have imagined.
It's a nebulous time.
Been too long ago.
So shortly after that session, that's when you open up for the Dave Clark Five in Fargo, right?
That's right, and they had the the big flag, the big English flag.
Well, that's the way I remember it, this huge flag. I saw a picture recently, and the flag is about 3x5. But in my defense, it was right behind me, and I was on a riser, so I would turn around and see this huge British flag. Unbeknownst to me, it was only 3 feet by 5 feet, but it looked really big.
And again, did you get to talk to the guys from the Dave Clark Five?
Yeah, they were really nice. You got to look at it from their perspective. They're in the middle of America, a long way from home, and the only people that are around them are fellow musicians. So they were very nice men, very nice people.
How many kids would fit in this arena in Fargo?
Boy, that's a good question.
Was that the auditorium? Yeah, several thousand easily.
What was the name of the venue?
Fargo Civic, I believe, which I believe is still there, but it has a different name. It was called the Fargo Civic Auditorium. Now it's something else, but it was a great, great venue. Nice stage, good acoustics.
Did any of your 45s get airplay in the Twin Cities? Or primarily in Fargo and St. Cloud?
Yeah, I don't believe I ever heard anything out down there. It was a little tighter market. And I believe I don't know that we were really considered a Minneapolis group, so it was kind of tough to break into that market because there were so many great bands putting out product at that point. with the Still Roving and the underbeats, and mm-hmm. so it was a little harder to break in, and we really didn't have a track record down there yet.
So you go down to IGL for a third session of recording. When was that?
November 67, the fall of 67, and I think there was snow on the ground, as I recall. This would have been with Pat
on
drums, and Doug on bass, Larry and I on guitar, and Grant singing. And we did a song, I'm Gonna Make You Love Me, that we got from a Jerry Butler album, and You're No Good, a song we got from Betty Everett. And I think we did Right Track, a song from Billy Butler, but I don't know for sure.
And then again, you go back to IGL for a fourth session shortly after that one.
Boy, yeah, we were making a lot of trips to Iowa.
Yeah, well, we got along very well with the guys in the studio, and we had a lot of fun. Again, it's a three-track recorder, so we had one track for music, one track for lead vocals, one track for background vocals. And in the January session, I definitely remember the snow. We all drove together in our van, and we had plywood boards we'd put over the amplifiers so some of us could lay down and sleep. And that may be a bit in the session where we did Right Track. On that one, Doug let me use his fuzz tone on my guitar, and so I used that on Right Track and Come On In, a Paul Butterfield song that Pat sang. Grant sang Right Track, and then we did a different version of Without the One You Love, a Four Tops song, and Larry sang lead on that. Uh-huh. And then we did a Bobby Bland song, You're Worth It All. Grant sang lead on that. What's interesting about this recording is the piano player from DJ and the Runaways sat in with us and played on that. If you listen to the track, it sounds like there's two notes of a saxophone playing, and uh-huh. I actually misfretted my guitar, and the notes ended up sounding like a saxophone. On the way, after the sessions, we'd always drive back again because save money, renting motel room. Doug drove. Sometimes we would smoke cigars to try to keep awake. I don't think we did this time. And I was in the passenger side in the front seat. And I can remember all of a sudden waking up and Doug hit a patch of ice and we were going sideways. And the snow was flying up almost as high as the van. I thought we were all going to die, but somehow Doug got us back on the road, and we ended up making it back to Minneapolis.
Did you have the name of the band on the side of the vehicle?
Yes, we had a white van, and Doug designed the logo, Kanoi. It's yellow letters outlined in black, and we still use that logo to this day.
So those last two sessions at IGL result in your third 45, and that would be You're No Good and Right Track, correct?
Yes.
What was the A side?
Well, we didn't really have an A side. It was probably Right Track, and without monopolizing, if I can digress, when we were inducted in the Minnesota Rock Hall of Fame 2005, Mike Flaherty sang with the group, and all of us here today did. And we maybe can talk about that in the future, but. Mike said, you know, there's in England, they have a big dance scene, and where DJs come, and they bring a secret record in a black velvet bag to these dances. And he said the big rage at this time is a song called Right Track by the Kanoi. We had to believe him.
So we're missing the boat by not taking the boat.
That should have been the A side if it wasn't.
Sue, what's going on with the Illusions now in 67?
Not much. By then, that was probably done. Then that's about the time that I filled in an all-girl group in the cities.
What was that group?
The 19th Amendment.
Who was in the 19th Amendment at that time?
It was Susie Mork, Sue Green, Linda Knudsen, and then I filled in for their keyboard player.
Now, that must have been unique, an all-girl band.
Extremely.
What kind of music were they playing? Were you playing?
We did rhythm and blues. We did, all of us sang, so that was kind of different, too. Well, except Nutsy, Linda. Well, she may have sung too, but so we had some pretty strong little vocals, and that was really fun. But we were the only all-girl group I knew of around the area.
There were three girls called the Loves.
Wasn't that about the same time? Mm-hmm.
They were an interesting little.
I do remember that.
That was the Loves, L-U-V-S?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did you know any of the ladies in that band?
Well, we did one job with them somewhere in Wisconsin. They didn't have a backup band per se, so they would have other groups back them up, was my understanding, because we did one job with them. I don't remember too much about it other than we pulled it off. Bob, do you have any remembrances of that, or Larry? You remember that gig?
Vaguely, just vaguely.
So they were strictly a vocal band.
Correct.
That needed a band to back them up,
right,
to play the instruments.
I don't know who booked them or how many times they played or did engagements, but we were lucky enough to somehow get on the tour with them for one night.
Wow.
Okay, so you've recorded your song, You've Got Your Troubles by the Fortunes, for this contest. And what happens next as far as this contest goes?
Well, if I remember, that's right at the time when I left the band. And the session was Larry and Grant and Doug and Bob and Mark Rowe on drums. And at right at that point, Kanoi went through a major change, not only with members, but also was that when they changed the name to Zarathustra? Is that correct?
Well, it happened in that time frame, yes, yeah. And this is I gave the history a little bit incorrectly in 67. We got fill-ins for Pat in 67.
Okay, yep.
But then in April of 68, then it became too burdensome to try to find people for a short time. That's when we had different drummers fill in, and that's when we recorded and that's actually when the Herps Battle of the Bands was in, I think, 68. I'm not the Herps. Let me start again. In April 68 is when the IGL Battle of the Bands was, if I recall, and that's why we had to, because we won, had to make the 90-second song. In June of 68, Doug Swanson had told us that he had a congenital heart condition, the same one that Bobby Darin had, which is a bicuspid aortic valve, and said he had to leave the group. Doug left the group, and we had a hard time finding a bass player, but we found a high school kid from Edina named Dave Burgett, and he joined the group. And this was with Mark Rowe drumming, and then Grant and I and Larry. And we really liked Dave, but he had a short stint in the Stillroven, and they wanted him back, and he wanted to go back to the Stillroven, so he played with us only for about a month. And the Stillroven bass player at that time, that whose place he took, was Mike Flaherty, who had been in the Seraphic Street Sounds. So Mike Flaherty joined our group, essentially a bass player trade. So Mike is quite a good singer. So we had Larry Grant, Mike Flaherty, and then it was Mark Rowe and myself. This would have been June 68, July 68.
And this is the band that records You've Got Your Troubles, or was that a different version?
Well, that was with Doug on bass, and that was right before Mike Flaherty joined the group.
Well, that's what was so bizarre. When I remember seeing the band on television on the Paul Revere and the Raiders show, because the people singing the song and playing the song were actually not all of the people that were on stage on the television show. Because I remember Grant mouthing Larry's part in the song. And, I mean, the band looked great. They had that Indian Nehru thing going on, and the band just looked wonderful. And I do believe that's one of the reasons why they won the thing, because they had a great look and a good sound.
So there was a total transformation here, right? From Kanoi to Zarathustra.
Total transformation.
And this all happens during this process of winning the contest, recording the song, and then going out to Los Angeles to play live.
Correct.
And who comes up with this name, Zarathustra?
Well, Mike Mike Flaherty joined the group, and Mark Rowe decided to leave the group and go with a group that was playing actually in Yellowstone at the time. So we had to find a drummer. We auditioned many drummers, and we ended up with Rick Johnson, who had been in the CA Quintet. And at that time, it would have been Grant on vocals, Larry on vocals, and myself on guitar, Rick Johnson on drums, Mike Flaherty on bass. Well, I was not a, quotes, heavy guitar player, and the thought was to add a heavy guitar player, and Mike and Grant could handle the vocals. And so it was felt at that time that we should get a different guitar player and get rid of Larry, not have Larry in the group. And not everybody's here to defend themselves. I didn't have anything to do with the decision. And again, it was, me Bob, either. You're the leader. You tell Larry.
Is that why I'm sitting between you and Larry?
Bob? Yeah. Let me ask. And that is the low point of my musical career. And that's kind of when I lost my heart for the business. And I can remember apologizing to Larry for the next 10 years.
For years, that's
every
right,
time Bob. I saw him. And but Mike knew John Howarth from Stillroven, and John decided to leave the Stillroven and joined our group. So it was Grant and I was the only original Canoy left, and Grant was in from the second version, but Rick Johnson, Mike Flaherty, John Howarth were all new. And so a name change seemed in order, and everybody was supposed to write down names, and Zarathustra was the one that came up on several people's list.
And the name comes from where?
It comes from a Richard Strauss symphonic piece called Thus Spoke Zarathustra. Piece is used in Space Odyssey, the beginning of Space Odyssey, that movie, which happened to be out at that time.
It's the name of a classical song?
Yes, yeah. And there was also a philosopher named Zoroaster, and I think it came from there originally.
Okay, so you guys go to Los Angeles to do this show. What was that like?
Well, boy, that was a lot of fun. I'm telling you, that may be one of the high points, because we got to meet Dick Clark. And he came up and shook our hands because he was a producer of the show, Where the Action Is. And that came on right after American Bandstand.
Was that a live show or taped?
We lip-synced to our 90-second recording. And but again, we got to meet once again Mark Lindsay and Drake and Fang and Smitty from Paul Revere and the Raiders, and they remembered us, and that was a lot of fun.
Did everybody else lip sync, or did bands play? Did they play live, Paul Revere?
I think it was all recorded.
And that show was on every afternoon?
Saturday afternoons.
Saturday afternoons.
By that time, American Bandstand was only on Saturdays, where it had been every weekday after school in the 50s. By this time, it was Saturdays.
And Pat, you're watching this show?
I remember watching it from in my living room. In fact, just a few years ago when the Tom Hanks film, That Thing You Do, came out, my wife and I were sitting in our living room watching it for the first time, and Pam turned to me and said, "Are you enjoying this movie?" And I thought about it for a moment and said, "You know what, Pam? I lived this movie. I would have been the drummer in the movie that broke his arm and had to sit in his living room while he watched his buddies become rich and famous."
Larry, so, are you? Larry, did you watch Where the Action Is?
I don't think I did. No, I had.
Did you know it was on?
I didn't pay too much attention. Bob had said I could play in the band till I found another gig, and I found a gig in a couple of weeks, so I was playing with the Perspectives at that point.
Who was in the Perspectives?
Oh, I remember singing with Mary Ann. She and I were, we replaced, they had three black singers before us. It was an R&B band, and so she and I replaced the two black singers and did lots of R&B. They had a big horn section and everything.